This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com coming to you on the 27th of April, 2011, and today I'm joined on the line by Barry Wyatt, the director of Cosmos International, a 100% volunteer-based welfare and international aid organization based in Kyoto, Japan, with sister offices in the U.S. Cosmos International Japan is currently working to provide food stocks and funds to quake-ravaged northern Japan, and more information is available from their website, cosmos.org. That's K-O-Z-M-O-Z.org, K-O-Z-M-O-Z.org for my American listeners. Barry Wyatt, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I did give a bit of an introduction there to Cosmos International Japan, but for those people in the audience who haven't heard of this organization before, perhaps you can tell us a little bit more about its history and how and when you came to found it.
Oh, Cosmos was founded in 1987. We started primarily by working in Mexico. We provided housing, medicine, and food stocks for underprivileged Mexican people. We then started working back in America, primarily working with undereducated and underemployed youth. And we then, because of our connections back with Mexico, we started working with illegal aliens, getting them educated, sponsoring them, bringing their families back to America, and getting them gainfully employed. So that's... We started working in Mexico about 14 years ago. So that's about where we are now.
So what's the impetus behind Cosmos? What's its ethos? Why is it around?
Cosmos's ethos. That's a great question. Myself personally, I'm a pastor. And currently, I don't pastor a church. I did pastor a church in Japan to about 8 years ago when Cosmos's social activities exceeded my ability to be able to do both jobs at the same time. I guess you would say our ethos is a Christian ethos. Love your brother. I guess that's the simplest way to put it, and that has guided all of our activities until now. Over the last few years, our number one goal has been to create programs and provide opportunities and ways for small organizations to be able to fund their organizations alternatively by, as opposed to most organizations seek corporate sponsorship. And we've tried to find different ways to provide alternative financing for different groups.
All right. Well, obviously, you're preoccupied at the moment with providing aid for the, as I mentioned, the quake-ravaged northern Japan, and what's happened up there is obviously beyond the imagination of a lot of people. And I understand that you have been providing aid, and your website indicates that the first shipment of 4 tons of food left on March 28th from Kyoto. And I understand that you've been up to assess the damage yourself. So perhaps you can fill us in on what's been happening over the past month and what you've been doing personally.
Okay, I would love to be able to do that. I just got back from Northeast Japan yesterday, actually. The situation has changed since the first time we were there, slowly but surely. We are seeing some improvement. For the first time, we're seeing local governments being able to actually distribute food stocks to some of the victims, well, most of the victims. However, it's very sparse. None of the places we visited this time, and we were in Oku, Matsushima-shi, Higashi, Matsushima-shi, Ishinomaki, none of those places were providing more than one meal to any of the victims where we had been. There's still a tremendous amount of disorganization. There is no central organization from any government agency at this point. Most aid distribution centers are ad hoc operations set up by various NGOs, and most of the aid is being administered through a series of emails. It's really quite amazing when you think about it. There are several groups that are sending out emails every day with tremendous numbers of threads. Many people are looking at those, trying to find out what they have, where they can put what they have to the best use. I personally think it's pretty amazing that so many little groups have been able to do so much in so little time.
Well, I'm sure it must be amazing, and it is heartening to hear, as you say, that the situation is improving somewhat. But what can you tell us about what the situation was like when you first went up there?
Well, when we first went up there, it was complete chaos, of course. However, I mean, for the average person in a shelter, the situation today and the situation when we first went up has changed very little in all actuality. I think maybe one of the interesting things is most people really don't know what a shelter is, because with myself recruiting both volunteers and gathering resources, a lot of people seem to wonder why we're working so hard to help these people. And I think most people think that a shelter is a stable place, a safe place for these people, and that they're being taken care of. But I don't think most people understand that a shelter is primarily either a gymnasium, an auditorium, a factory. It's a large room primarily. Most people have 2 or 3 meters by 2 or 3 meters space, and that's it. There's no walls. Bathing facilities are practically non-existent. What bathing facilities have been set up by the GATI, the Self-Defense Force, most of those do not have hot water. It's a very dire situation at this point still.
It sounds quite horrible, actually, and you're right. I think very few people do really take into account what it means to have these people staying in these shelters. So what kind of aid have you been providing so far, and how much have you provided?
We've been providing primarily food stock. We started by gathering rice, and we have taken several trucks of rice. We have then started to gather various daily needs products. We did find this time, however, that over this last 30 days, the number of daily needs products that have been donated have greatly exceeded the demand, and we will from this point be returning primarily to providing food stocks. This time was the first time that we took up vegetables, and we did, I'm sorry, just a crazy day, I'm just a little bit strung out here. None of the places that we delivered vegetables to this time had received any vegetables to date. It was really an amazing thing. So our next truck will leave on Monday. That's in 4 days, with another somewhere between 2 and 4 tons of vegetables and rice.
Absolutely incredible. And so all of this is food aid that's been donated to you, or you've been able to purchase with donations?
Most of the food has been donated. The vegetables we've purchased, we went to several local co-ops and farmers' agencies. They call them ichibas here, where many of the smaller farmers get together and they sell to a large market that then distributes that food out to restaurants and supermarkets. In trying to procure vegetables at a low cost, I was amazed with several places we went to, the larger markets, the price that they ended up quoting us was more than I could go across the street and buy the vegetables for in my local supermarket. Last week, we did make a real solid connection with a group out of Osaka, and we were able to buy over $1,000 worth of vegetables, which normally would have cost $2,000 or $3,000 by my basic calculations. I think we did a really good job there, but the majority of all of the stuff that we've delivered so far has been donated.
Interesting. Well, it's very interesting to hear about that process, because again, that's something that most people would never even have to think about the logistics of dealing with. But unfortunately, during these situations is all too much of a daily reality for people like yourself. So So let's talk about the fact that you're perhaps not only fighting the hunger of the people who are at this point still trying to get a daily meal or three daily meals, hopefully, but you're also fighting the apathy that comes as the attention of the media shifts away from this situation. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, that has really been one of our, probably the biggest problem that we have at this point. I mean, I guess it's a natural situation. You have internationally many serious situations throughout the world. And of course, in America over the last couple of weeks, we've had some horrible storms. It does tend to shift people's focus away from this tragedy. Even in Japan, with just various things, I don't know, it really hasn't even been the news here in Japan. But our neighbors and the people that we're associating with really are very apathetic. And I'm not sure if it's apathy or just, I'm not even sure what it is, but they basically put out of their mind this whole situation. It's shocking to me, really.
That's right. But as you say, perhaps not all that surprising when we really consider it. I can attest to that as well over here on the western part of Honshu. Absolutely. People have made their donations and it seems to be out of their minds again. And it's not being covered on the daily news in the same way that it was, obviously. So again, that attention is shifting and we have to understand that this is an ongoing situation. And I certainly hope people are continuing to keep it in mind. So what are you looking for from people out there? What can people do to help an organization like Cosmos?
Well, they can donate rice. That's probably one of the it's a great food stock. It lasts well. It has a tremendous amount of energy for the people. It's a comfort food. And one of the reasons we picked rice right from the beginning was because it was a comfort food. People like to eat things when they're in a difficult situation that their mom made. And it's been well received. So that's one thing they can do. Of course, we just simply need money. It takes us about $1,000 to get a truck loaded here, get up to the Tohoku region and get back here, including the diesel and the road tolls. You know, as an aside, it's kind of amazing to me. One of our supporters asked me, are you able to take these trucks up without paying tolls since you're taking up relief aid? And I said, no, we're paying full board just like everybody else driving up there in a station wagon. It really would help if the government was able to provide some kind of relief for organizations that are delivering aid. You know, one thing you said earlier that really struck a chord with me is that you said people did make their donation and they've kind of forgotten about it. And I think that's pretty much a natural reaction that most people would have, thinking, well, I did my part and now it's done. I would like to just let your listeners know that it really is important to take some time if you're going to give some money to research and look into just how the money is going to be used, because I think a lot of people have donated to large organizations like the Red Cross that will do some tremendously valuable things with that money later on. However, in the meantime, none of the money that has been donated to Red Cross has been translated into any food or housing for these victims. And so at this point in time, if your listeners still have resource and can be a support to these people in Tohoku, giving funds to various organizations can be one of the best things they can do at this time.
That's absolutely right, and that's something that I already knew going into this situation, that this is usually how these situations develop, but it was amazing to read nonetheless very recently that of the billion-plus dollars that the Red Cross has already collected for the Japanese relief efforts, exactly zero has so far been distributed to the people in need, which is which is quite atrocious. And so I certainly hope that people are looking into various organizations that they can donate to at the hopefully more local level. And Cosmos International is obviously one of those that has already started providing aid and is on the ground. So it's an organization that I hope people will check into at cosmos.org. So if people are interested in donating money, how can they go about doing that?
On our website, we have a link that you can donate simply by using your credit card. If you are in Japan, you can furikomi or wire transfer money to a bank account that is listed on the website. If neither of those options is good for your listeners, they can contact our American office. The phone number is on the website, and they can make donations in America as well.
And what percentage of the aid goes to actual aid, and what percentage is for overhead?
With Cosmos is a little bit unique in that when I spoke of alternative funding methods, Cosmos actually operates an enterprise funding system. We, in Japan, we have English schools and a cafe that the profit is used to provide for all of the basic overhead of Cosmos. So when a person at this point in time donates, say, $100 or Ichiman yen to Cosmos, $100 or Ichiman yen actually ends up in Tohoku in the form of rice, vegetables, or product.
All right, excellent. Well, I certainly hope people will take a look into the organization, as I say, cosmos.org, K-O-Z-M-O-Z.org. And I guess on that note, Barry Wyatt, is there anything that you'd like to leave the listeners with today as they think about the ways that they can contribute to help the people who are affected by this tragedy?
Well, I'd just like to thank everybody that has been a tremendous support up until now. We've received a great number of donations, both in food stocks, materials, and funds. I'd like to encourage your listeners to continue that support. Obviously, with the news and people's feelings shifting away from the tragedy, our donations have dropped off tremendously. So that's probably at this point the thing that I'd like to remind our readers is it's not over. It's not over now. It's not going to be over anytime soon. We have actually one thing that I don't think anybody has talked about yet and is an extremely serious situation. The vast majority of shelters are actually schools. And as schools have restarted, the facilities that were still in good enough shape to be used as shelters are now in a situation where the school board wants to have school going on there. They've actually asked many of the victims to move. And I haven't heard back from our friends in Ishinomaki. We have a center there that we've been providing a tremendous amount of aid to at the Senshu Daigaku, but there were, I believe, 180 victims housed there, and they were given until the 28th, that's tomorrow, to leave the facility. And I'm really not exactly sure where they could go or how they could go anywhere, but for our listeners that are in Japan, it would be good to put some pressure, if possible, on their local authorities to be able to look into this situation.
Absolutely, that's incredible. So you mentioned specifically that at that university in Ishinomaki. Are there other shelters that are in a similar situation that you know of?
It's not an off situation. I would say that from what I've seen, and I mean I don't have all the information, but probably half of the victims right now that are in shelters are in some form of an educational institution, whether it be a grade school, middle school, high school, or some facility run by a university. And all of those places are open for, are running classes now and have started classes their spring term. And there's a lot of pressure there. And I think that it's really going to come to a head. Of course, the federal government wants those people housed there because they have nowhere to put them. Of course, the schools want to have classes. The students, especially in private schools, have paid money. They want to have their classes. It's an extremely difficult situation, and I really don't know how that we can do anything with it. The government is still months and months away from being able to set up temporary housing. So this is really a serious situation at this point in time.
Well, do you know of any organizations that are attempting to set up some sort of, a scheme whereby people can room other people that in other parts of Japan or something like
that? Yes, I've heard of many different organizations trying to make headway in that. I know personally some people that I know that have welcomed people from Tohoku down in Mino. And Osaka, I know of several private people that have opened up their vacant properties to house people. It is obviously one way that we could relocate a tremendous number of those people. However, we do have to keep in mind that at this point there are approximately 130,000 people in those shelters. So I don't know if we have 130, well, part of those are families, so I don't know if we have 100,000 empty apartments around.
Indeed, yes, this it's an incredible situation, and I think the scope and scale of it is not really being reported on adequately at this point. So, very interesting to hear about that. Yeah. All right, well, Barry, I know you've had a very long day and been doing a lot of work recently, so I want to thank you for taking time to talk with us today, and I hope that you can come on again in the future to tell us and update us more about what's going on in the field there.
We'd really love to be able to do that, James. Thank you for having us today.
All right, well, it was good to talk with you, and I hope the listeners will check out Barry Wyatt and Cosmos International Japan at cosmos.org.
Thank you.